You're listening to an encore edition of Studio Tulsa recorded earlier this year. Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today, a look at the difficult struggles of weight loss, food addiction, and binge eating. Andy Mitchell was a child who loved to eat, and with a tumultuous home life, food became a friendly coping mechanism, a babysitter, if you like, a refuge. But on her 20th birthday, a day when she binge ate the birthday cake she was making for her and her friends, she stepped on a scale and it read 268 pounds. She knew she had to make changes in her life. She did, and lost half her body weight, yet was still curiously unhappy and bereft at times. Coming to terms with the role food played in her life would come later. As recounted in her book, It Was Me All Along, a memoir. The book excellently describes the struggles of food addiction and the dark attraction and self-loathing simultaneously associated with binge eating. Today, Andy Mitchell is a writer, a recipe designer, and the author of the blog Can You Stay for Dinner? And her new book is a New York Times bestseller. She still loves food, and her weight can fluctuate, but her relationship to food is far more healthy. She shares her story with us today on Studio Tulsa. Andy Mitchell, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, thank you. I'm so happy to talk to you today.
This book, It Was Me All Along. First of all, you introduce yourself to us through this wonderful description in the first couple of pages that's, I have to tell you, it's food porn, really. It's a story. Yeah. It's a story of a sour cream fudge cake, but it gives us an interesting introduction to your life. Tell us about this description.
So it's my 20th birthday, and I'm making this cake that I've made all my life. I'm 20 years old, and I'm making a sour cream fudge cake, and I'm assuming that I'm going to be making it for my friends and my family to share that at my birthday party. And, you know, I'm going through the process of baking it, and I love baking. And so it's this total, like, sensory experience. And I'm done baking, and I've frosted it, and I'll just have a slice, and I'll lick the frosting. And I end up, you know, eating it kind of slice by slice until I've finished the whole cake, which is, I don't know if everybody has had that experience, but it's a really shameful, kind of guilt-inducing experience if you've ever gone through kind of not realizing that you're going to end up eating a whole entire cake. But, you know, it's not just that I loved the cake. It was that I kind of had lost control, and here's something I love so much, and I kind of, like, abused it. The beginning of the book is like, you know, I'm describing something in such a loving way, and here I am kind of going crazy, you know, like losing control with it.
From the very beginning, it sounds like you were a child that loved food. And you also had trouble, I think there was somebody in your life later, maybe a doctor or somebody who said, you know, or a dietitian who said, kids normally have this sort of mechanism. They eat when they're hungry and they don't when they're not. You never developed that. Now you have to learn how to do that in your 20s.
Right, right.
Was that a good sense of what childhood was like?
Yeah, I think, you know, from my earliest memories, I was always big. And I think I never, you know, I grew up in a home where food was really unrestricted. There was no kind of boundaries around food. There was no sense of what you should or shouldn't eat. You know, we had family meals, but it was like never talked about, like, that I should eat a certain way or like what was healthy or not. And especially growing up in like kind of a chaotic and traumatic environment, I made my own decisions to kind of turn to food for comfort or for fun or for anything. So I never used food in a way where it was just based on hunger or fullness, which is like, you know, like little kids, I would see other kids like not wanting to finish their meal because they wanted to run outside and play. Like they didn't have time to eat because they were so excited to just like get back to whatever they were doing. And I was like never that kid. I always wanted to just, no, oh my gosh, it's time to eat. This is amazing. You know, I placed such a high value on food you know, from the get-go. And I don't know, I never had a kind of a normal relationship with it. And so I think when I turned 20 and decided to, like, change my life, it was really, like, learning this entirely new thing. I mean, it was basically like, oh, here, learn how to, like, relearn how to walk. You know, it wasn't anything, you know, it wasn't simple, let's say that.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned your chaotic childhood. In the book, you do a wonderful job of giving us a sense of normalcy eventually becoming chaotic, as perhaps you became aware of your father's drinking problem, or did it, I assume it accelerated as you were growing up?
Yeah, I was aware of it because of the fighting that went on between my parents, and I knew that when I was five, and he started really drinking, I mean, almost exactly the day I was born, but just right around when I was born, and when I was five, he lost his job, and he had had a really, you know, really good job, and he lost that job, and that really sent him into a worse depression than he had always kind of lived with. And so he started drinking more, and the fights got worse between my parents, or my mom saying, like, you know, Rob, just take a night off, you know, like, don't, let's not drink tonight, like, you know. And so I would notice that it kind of got worse, or he would get, like, these violent outbursts, or, you know, so I recognized that, like, okay, things aren't okay here. So I kind of always had an awareness that, like, something wasn't right, and I could connect it even at a very young age with the fact that he drank a lot of beer. You know, even though I was young, I got that much.
Now, do you think that your relationship with food as a child was based on that family relationship, or was this something different?
I think a lot of it was that. I think when you don't know, I think when there's chaos and, like, uncertainty and you're unsettled and you can't control your environment as a child, food is the one thing you probably can control. I mean, you're not conscious of that, but I think food is something you do have power over. And for me, that was certainly true. And then I also think that, you know, with my dad drinking, it would be, you know, I say in the book that, you know, he would start drinking at night and then he'd get hungry and my mom would be working night shifts. And so he'd get hungry and he'd, you know, order pizzas or subs and I would eat with him. And so I kind of learned that we, you know, we eat big and it's fun at night. And so I would kind of mimic his eating habits. And then in the day, he would sleep, you know, all day because he's, you know, hungover. And my mom would, again, be working. And food then was a babysitter. So it's kind of like, it kind of, in various ways, like, food stepped in so many odd roles to fill in these strange cracks in my family life, you know, in this role that I didn't realize it then, but I can see it now. How clearly that how it soothed me in so many ways.
Well, and that's one thing your memoir does, is it points out how food was the soothing agent in a lot of hurts, family hurts, of watching your family sort of unwind as your father's alcoholism increased. And I mean, we're talking leaving town sort of things. And it's hard. It's, you know, it's sad to read, but also the own sort of defense mechanisms you have to put up from childhood ridicule. You write very poignantly about the first time you realized your weight was an issue, and it was at recess.
Yeah. You just realize. I mean, I think, you know, I was sitting on a swing, and you can, I'd look down and see, like, you know, my thighs, like, are, you know, bulging over, like, that black rubber of the swing, and the kids are laughing, saying, like, you know, oh, she's gonna break the swing, and it's like, I think I didn't realize that, you know, at first I look over and I'm like, oh, I wonder what they're laughing at, and then I realize that it's me, and it's just, it's mortifying, because I did always know that I was different or bigger, that I was the biggest person that I knew from a very young age. But I kind of think that when you're young, you know, now when I think about, you know, if I wanted to lose 20 pounds now, like wanting to lose 20 pounds, right? It's like, it doesn't feel like who you are. Your weight doesn't necessarily always feel like this like character. But like when you're young, if it's all you know, then it's like your freckles, you know? Mm. So it's like someone making fun of you for your weight. It's like that is your core, as I didn't know myself without my weight. So it really hits you. And so it's very defining at that age to be made fun of for something that you don't know yourself any different, you know? So it really rattles you, and I can see how it's so affected me and how it can so affect other kids now, you know?
I would assume you would come up with defense mechanisms, but as you were writing about your high school days, even when you were quite large, I mean, over 200 pounds,
yeah,
you were still in your own way popular. You had your circle of friends. You actually had more friends than you knew because you became prom queen.
Yeah. That was shocking to me. I think you just, and I've heard people say this before, but you know, when you have something that maybe you consider a flaw or a hindrance in some way, you try to, either you're trying to conceal it and shine in other ways or whatever. And so one thing for me has always been like, you know, I started really young trying to be funny. Or, you know, like, I mean, I remember even, like, when I was in the fourth grade, like, making fun of my weight. Because I was like, you're not going to make fun of me first. I'm going to make fun of myself. And then I'm acknowledging it, so you don't have anything on me. And so I would try to be funny, and then that, and so that kind of sets people at ease around you. And I would, you know, I would try to be kind, or, I don't know, you try to... in some way, like, just be more outgoing despite whatever you think is your hang-up. And I don't know, maybe to some degree it served me. And I kind of think that that's a lot of what I say in the book, is that, like, you know, I was very big, and that was a challenge in some ways. But, like, I was able to form a lot. You know, I formed my personality in those years, you know, of being very big. And there's a lot of good that came out of that. You know, I think that there's something really beautiful about the way that I was able to grow into myself without kind of, I don't know, there are challenges to thinness that I notice now, you know? So, I don't know. It's, yeah, I somehow still put myself out there. I don't know, somehow is probably not the right word, but high school ended up being pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Now, at some point during those high school years, your doctor said you've got to lose weight. You're going to be hitting 300, 350 in a few years. And I think that was very shocking to you. So you went through a number of regimens, which really didn't work for a lot of reasons, I guess. That must have been tremendously frustrating.
Oh, yeah. He kind of showed me a growth chart, and I was always on this like steady line upwards and to the right, just always, you know, growing in weight and you know, it was scary. And so I started in eighth grade trying to lose weight, and I hated it, because at that age, I think my weight felt like a curse upon me. And I would look at my friends, and they were, you know, kind of eating the same thing. It seems like we were all eating like Little Debbie's, and we were all eating the same. But, like, I was the one that was, like, so big. And so it was very upsetting to have to try harder to, like, fit in and to be smaller. And it was all of this, I think, experiencing failure time and time again with these diets or these, you know, and some of them were much more restrictive than others. I think especially at a young age, you're like, oh my gosh, am I ever going to be able to do it? It's kind of, it's a real, like, really nicks away at your self-esteem, I think. And it sets up such a cycle of wanting to binge eat. And because you're in this restrictive pattern, and I think dieting in general makes you feel like, oh my gosh, when is the next time that I'm going to be able to have something actually good? And then you have that, like, Sunday supper feeling of, like, okay, well, the diet's going to start Monday, and you'll eat everything on Sunday. And so, I don't know, it just, I recognized that, like, starting the diet was just kind of, like, started this pattern in my life of feeling like, A, failure was, you know, a kind of a permanent state that I lived in for many years, and then B, it created that cycle of, like, deprivation and feeling of restriction, and then, you know, wanting to binge eat, and then, you know, start the cycle up again. And so it's just such a horrible place to be in, especially when you're young, you know, and you don't know. And then I kept thinking, like, is this what you have to do to, like, be, like, a thin person? You know, so it was very scary at that time.
My guest today is Andy Mitchell. She is a writer and blogger. She writes the blog Can You Stay for Dinner? And she's also a recipe designer. So, you know, she has this great love affair with food, but also it's been a long trip that she recounts in her book, It Was Me All Along, a memoir. It's published by Clarkson Potter, which recounts her childhood as, you know, a young girl who loved to eat and was quite heavy, and you document your weight loss and also sort of the trials that you've had since losing that weight. You sort of write, you know, about that obsession about food, avoiding food. And for a good part of your heavy days, there wasn't that obsession. But once you lost the weight, then it becomes obsessive.
Right. Once I lost the weight, I think this might be a common thing that you tend to kind of think that there will be a finish line that, you know, that at some point you'll be able to return to maybe some of the good foods that you loved or whatever it is. And then you get to whatever your goal is. And it's like, sadly, there's no finish line. And that was really, like, startling to me. And I was very aware that now that I had lost all this weight, I had lost 135 pounds, that I was in a place I'd never been. I was like, I had lost, you know, a person in weight. I had lost half of my body weight. People were noticing me like they had never noticed me before. I was, like, somehow validated. I had no coping mechanism, which was food. So any like discomfort that came in the world was like, you know, I couldn't turn to food anymore because I couldn't, you know, eat out of control. And so I kind of felt this, like, odd sense of loss. So I was in this odd state of, like, almost like a depression about, like, after having lost the weight. And I think it kind of made me, I turned to a really rigid way of, like, I was counting every calorie. I was, you know, exercising like a maniac. I was very scared to gain the weight back. And I wondered if my life before, when I was morbidly obese, like, in some way, is that not an eating disorder? You know, is that not an eating disorder? And then when I lost the weight and became very restrictive, and that was kind of, you know, a restrictive eating disorder, it's like I had swung from one side of, you know, like, this balance to the other, and I couldn't find a middle ground. So it was extremely hard for me to ever land in the middle.
The book read as if you were less happy, you know, when you were obsessing about what foods you were avoiding and the obsession with maintaining weight, and you seemed less happy. At least that's the way the book read.
Yeah. I think what happened was that I think all my life I had dealt with probably some form of a depression. I think I probably, you know, in my life I've had depression or I've had anxiety, and I probably had eaten them away. I probably had used food to cope with so much of the things that had come my way. And having lost the weight, I was without that coping mechanism. And so what happened was I was stripped of that. And so now I had to completely relearn how to deal with anything. So for a time, I felt just standing naked. You know, it's just like, mm-hmm. I mean, it just felt like a time when I had nowhere to really turn to. And so I think I was less happy. But I don't think it was necessarily the thinness per se, so much as the fact that I was having to kind of grieve the loss of using food.
Right.
You know?
Well, it's interesting, you know, the title of your memoir, It Was Me All Along, sort of refers to that. You know, the weight was there, then it wasn't there, but the problems and the way with dealing with the weight loss and the issues surrounding weight and binge eating was you right. all along. It was, and there's also this nice thing about it was, doesn't matter if you're heavy or thin, it's still, you know, that it's who you are, you know,
right.
and that sort of comes out in this book as well. But one of the things that the book does do well is gives people an insight into there's on one side, there's shame and sort of powerlessness of binge eating. On the other hand, the delight, that sort of momentary point of pleasure. And, mm-hmm. and the book does a wonderful job of sort of putting those two contrasting sets of emotions together.
Thank you. There is something really nice about like the kind of abandon that you have with binge eating. And I like can recognize that. I really can. Like because I say in the final, at the conclusion of the book, that like I do, there is something to be missed about like, you know, not giving a hoot about anything nutrition-wise. You know what I mean? Like just like the kind of reckless abandon with food, and sometimes like that oblivion is really, that sounds very exciting. you know, so I don't know. I don't really know. I think there's something freeing in just acknowledging that. I don't know that it's good or bad. I think it's just real. And I think all of us kind of feel it to a degree. You know, it's like we love Thanksgiving, you know.
Right.
You know.
But then it's also we love the, you know, the six pack of Little Debbie's we sneak into the purse and
oh my god.
Which yeah. you also sort of, you know, talk about during the, you know, the fact that, you know, you would hoard food and take it home.
Yeah.
And, yeah, no.
Oh my gosh.
And of course we should mention that you did lose this weight, and I'm sure people want to know how did you go about losing that weight after so many, you know, you had some drug therapies that didn't work, you know, tough diets, and yet you mm-hmm. were able to lose the weight. What happened?
I think a lot of it was just, you know, I did Weight Watchers for a little bit. Ultimately, I think calorie counting for me, you know, during my weight loss process was a huge, huge help. And I don't know if I'm just the type of person that calorie counting really works for. I think it was mostly calorie counting for me that really, really helped and kind of, you know, made me aware of like looking at nutrition labels and kind of understanding what a serving size was, or, you know, I kind of got in touch with like, you know, what is, you know, what's a serving of chicken? Like what is a serving of brown rice? And so calorie counting was a huge part of it for me. And then also, I started exercising for the first time, you know, really in my life. And, that was huge. I ran, which I don't know. I ended up hating running after about 2 years, but running was a big help.
And you actually moved to Rome, and you lost a lot of the weight. Which is just, you know, I can't imagine losing weight in Rome. You know, I think I would be eating my way across the city.
I you know, it's funny. I thought about that. I was in the middle of my weight loss journey when I moved to Rome, and I was nervous because I, you know, it's like the land of pasta and pizza and gelato. But I got there, and it's the thing about Rome is that number one, everything's it's not the portions that we have here, but and you're walking everywhere. But number two, like the people there have an extreme reverence for food, so that every meal is this experience. So when I what I learned in Rome was like mindfulness that I hadn't had before. Like I would sit down to a meal and I would actually stop and I would savor it and I would enjoy it in a way that sounds kind of maybe icky because it's a little bit like feely, but it was so special. And I don't know, I really savored food in a way I hadn't before. So if anything, I stopped and I lost weight in Rome because I savored my meals more.
Mm. Now, what's also amazing to me is that you work in food. You've been a recipe designer. You write a blog. Can you stay for dinner? It's all about testing good recipes. And I would think that would be, you know, I think that the average person thinking about it would say, well, that's just like you're just tempting yourself. But you found that you have a completely different relationship with food today.
I see what you mean. I see where there would be a temptation, but here's the thing. Number one, I make mostly, you know, the healthy recipes.
Right.
Number two, I think that there's something that when no food is off limits and you are, when you say to yourself, I can make anything I want today, what am I going to make? There's something like that lack of restriction there at some point becomes, like that license, that freedom is just makes it like, oh, okay, well then I could have it. So I don't feel like a temptation to binge on it as much, you know, like it's so available to me that it's not as exciting as like me thinking about going out to eat. Like, you know, if anything, the foods that I make are like not, I love them so much, but they're not the temptation foods, you know?
Yeah.
Now, if anything, the times I have to rein it in are when I go, you know, I live in New York City, and the times I go out to eat to, like, the crazy, amazing restaurants or, you know, to try the bakeries, that's when you have to kind of, you know, put on your, like, mindful cap and just try your best.
It's a really good book. The name of it, It Was Me All Along, a memoir. Andy Mitchell, you can read your blog at Can You Stay for Dinner, and we thank you for your time today. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Andy Mitchell is a writer, a recipe designer, and the blogger behind Can You Stay for Dinner? Her new book, a New York Times bestseller, is titled It Was Me All Along, a memoir. It's published by Clarkson Potter. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own, do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.